This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
An emergency vaccination campaign is getting underway in northeastern Nigeria to prevent a deadly cholera outbreak from spreading to other countries. The World Health Organization is heading this campaign.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up. Also, the UN says 36 Burundian refugees were killed in South Kivu province, and the DRC government says it's investigating the incident. And in Kenya, opposition presidential candidate Raila Odinga says he'll hold campaigns around the country calling for electoral commission reforms. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the DRC government says it's investigating Friday's deadly violence in South Kivu province. The UN says 36 Burundian refugees were killed by government soldiers. Reports say more than 120 others were wounded. The UN MONUSCO peacekeeping mission says the violence occurred in Kamaniola. AFP quotes government spokesman Lambert Mende as saying many of those killed were members of an armed group. However, he gave no details. An Interior Ministry official claims the violence began after some refugees overran a jail operated by DRC's intelligence agency. He says they demanded the release of Burundians being held for deportation. AFP also quotes some witnesses as saying the refugees were victims of religious persecution. They say the refugees are followers of a woman prophet who claims to have seen visions of the Virgin Mary. There are about 36,000 Burundian refugees in the DRC. Hopes that the tiny nation of Lesotho might find political stability have been shattered by recent events, including the shooting death of the country's army chief and the arrest of a journalist who was critical of the government. Southern Africa heads of state met over the weekend to discuss a way forward. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
An election in June was Lesotho's third poll in 5 years, after two coalitions collapsed amid infighting and meddling from the army. The third time was supposed to be the charm, as new Prime Minister Tom Tebane promised to loosen the military's stranglehold on politics. But the killing of the army chief by two subordinates 2 weeks ago has raised concerns that more instability is ahead. And the arrest of a journalist and the shutdown of his radio station have made the situation even more dire, critics of the government say. In the last 3 months, says opposition politician Frohang Sekamane, the nation has fallen under the reign of terror.
The police can seize anybody, doesn't matter how very high placed they were. A person at the level of minister can be taken, instructed to come to the police, and they do that, and then they can be tortured for 3 days, and then also over the weekend and forced to say certain things. That is what I mean by terror.
In a written statement sent to VOA, the opposition documents a litany of events, including the arrest, alleged torture, and subsequent flight of an opposition lawmaker. The nation's communication minister confirmed the lawmaker's August arrest, but said he was called in as a person of interest in a murder case and was treated well while in custody. Rights watchdog Amnesty International says it is also worried about recent events in Lesotho. Researcher Shireen Mukadam.
Really what we're seeing is patterns of arbitrary arrests. We are seeing allegations of torture and other ill treatment. We're seeing a lack of progress into criminal investigations for unlawful killings. And we're also seeing attacks on freedom of expression in Lesotho.
The opposition and rights groups are calling on the international community and on the Southern African Development Community to assist in restoring the rule of law. Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has made numerous attempts at mediation. Heads of state met over the weekend in South Africa to discuss the issue, with host President Jacob Zuma saying, "We cannot and shall not be in Lesotho forever." Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Yeah. In Kenya, opposition presidential candidate Raila Odinga says he'll hold campaigns around the country calling for electoral commission reforms. Odinga says he wants many of the top officials removed before he's willing to take part in a rerun of the presidential election on October 17th. A court nullified the results of the August 8th vote in which incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner. Odinga has accused the Electoral Commission of collaborating with the ruling party to rig the elections. Kenyatta, meanwhile, says the commission should remain unchanged and does not want the judiciary involved in the matter. An emergency vaccination campaign is getting underway in northeastern Nigeria to prevent a deadly cholera outbreak from spreading to other countries. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the World Health Organization is heading this campaign.
The World Health Organization reports the potentially devastating cholera situation is emerging in Borno State in northeastern Nigeria. During the past few months, it says 2,600 suspected cases of this fatal disease, including 48 deaths, have occurred in this former stronghold of Boko Haram. The militant group has been waging war to establish an Islamic State in northeastern Nigeria since 2009. Dominique Legros is cholera coordinator for WHO's Department for Pandemic and Epidemic Diseases. He says the outbreak, which is centered in camps for internally displaced people, is spreading to other areas of northeastern Nigeria, toward Chad and northern Cameroon. He says 900,000 people in the state will receive the oral cholera vaccine to quickly contain the spread of the disease.
Once it's out of the box, once it has spread, it's very, very difficult to contain, and we have huge number of cases and deaths. So this outbreak in Nigeria hopefully will not reach Chad, because in Chad already we have an alert in the eastern part of the country towards the border with Sudan, 344 cases, 49 deaths.
Legros says this comes to a 14% case fatality. He notes this is very high for a cholera outbreak, which usually has a case fatality rate of less than 1%. WHO estimates the global cholera disease burden at around 2.9 million suspected cases, including 95,000 deaths. It reports Yemen has the world's worst cholera epidemic, with nearly 690,000 suspected cases and more than 2,000 deaths. The agency expresses concern about the situation in Africa, where it reports tens of thousands of suspected cases and thousands of deaths in, among others, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, and Tanzania. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Nigeria, a group calling for the secession of the Biafra region has been labeled a terrorist organization by the military. The military released a statement Friday regarding the movement called the Indigenous People of Biafra. The Associated Press says the statement follows recent clashes between members and security forces. President Buhari recently said his government would not only step up the fight against Boko Haram, but also against what he called ethnic violence fueled by political mischief makers. 50 years ago, a civil war erupted over Biafra's attempt to break away. More than 1 million people in the predominantly Igbo region died, many of starvation. A champion of children's rights who negotiated the release of more than 80 Chibok schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram has won a top UN prize. Nigerian lawyer Zana Mustafa has been given UNHCR's Nasen Refugee Award. His school in the Borno state capital of Maiduguri has remained opened during the Boko Haram insurgency, which has killed 20,000 people. The school provides a free education as well as free meals, uniforms, and health care to more than 500 students. In You were listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. At 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN says 36 Burundian refugees were killed in South Kivu province, and the DRC government says it's investigating the incident. And in Kenya, opposition presidential candidate Raila Odinga says he'll hold campaigns around the country calling for electoral commission reforms. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. More than 300 global companies have now committed themselves to reducing emissions in line with the Paris Climate Agreement. That's 90 more than last year. 50 U.S. companies are involved, more than any other country. The goal is to help keep rising global temperatures to well below 2 degrees Celsius in the coming years. Scientists say temperatures above that level would trigger greater sea level rise, droughts, floods, wildfires, and plant and animal extinction. Cynthia Camis is director of private sector climate mitigation at the World Resources Institute. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about the greenhouse gas emissions reduction program called the Science-Based Targets Initiative.
It's an initiative that is working to encourage companies to raise their ambition of their reduction targets in line with the Paris Agreement.
Now, what exactly does that mean? We understand that more than 300 global companies are going to do this.
So there's many steps to their participation. First, the company makes a commitment to set a science-based target, and then they have 2 years to actually develop the target and submit it to the initiative for review. And then we have a set of criteria that we've determined represent best practice on how to set a science-based target, and we review the targets against those criteria, and the targets that get approved are then recognized through the initiative. We just review the target itself and the level of ambition and the boundary of the target, things like that, to determine whether it meets our criteria. So far, we've approved 71 companies' targets. And you can see those all on our website.
Can you give us an idea what some of these companies are doing to try to reduce emissions?
Some of the things that companies are doing to meet these targets are improving the energy efficiency of their operations, investing in renewable energy. Many of the targets include the company's value chain, so engaging with suppliers and helping suppliers be more efficient are some of the actions that companies are taking.
How does this line up with the Paris Climate Agreement?
The companies are all setting targets that are 2-degree targets, so that's in line with the minimum ambition of the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement also encourages them to go beyond 2 degrees to 1.5-degree targets. As 1.5-degree targets become available or beyond 2-degree targets become available, we'll be helping companies to set targets with that increased level of ambition as well.
Cynthia Camis is director of private sector climate mitigation at the World Resources Institute. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In Zimbabwe, state media, which support the government, are the main source of information. That's now being challenged by young Zimbabweans who are creating viral internet content that appeals to ordinary people. Reporter Kudzai Zenwashi looks at how online content creators are gaining ground while the mainstream media struggles to adapt.
Zimbabwe's media landscape is complicated, but young Zimbabweans have been gaining influence by creating content online. Sam Farai Monroe, an activist and a content creator, explains the appeal of the internet and social media.
I think the difference between state and mainstream media on the one hand and online media on the other is, you know, I think you find a lot of young people in Zimbabwe are more attracted to the online space. One, because you've got more and more young people who've got access to internet and to Facebook,
And Monroe says the new alternatives to the state media provide users access to information and also allows them to communicate directly with each other.
If it's breaking news on Twitter, you'll be getting that breaking news from most likely from 263 Chat or Open Pali, as opposed to traditional news sources. And on Facebook, you know, a lot of young Zimbabweans tune into the humor and the comedy, and you've got quite a few like young online content creators who are producing really cool like online TV shows. You know, the likes of like Bus Stop, who deal with social and political issues through humor. Even like our show, The Week, where, you know, it's a weekly political satire show where we deal with the kind of burning political issues of the week through humor. Maybe we joke about vice presidents being poisoned with ice cream and first ladies attacking people with extension cords.
One influential online program, Bus Stop TV, features comical skits that are packed with social and political commentary. Its co-founder and producer, Lucky Aaron, explains how its programming goes viral on social media.
It's always the way we tell our stories. We use comedy as a drive of our stories. So that's one of the success of our news, which are going viral. We are different from mainstream media because we tell serious issues in a comical way.
In one recent incident, Bus Stop TV covered a pro-government march called to show solidarity with the First Lady Grace Mugabe. She was the focus of criticism after allegedly assaulting a young model in South Africa with an electrical extension cable. But many of those participating in the march said they were not aware of its purpose. Because of their coverage, Bus Stop TV reporters were barred from covering a recent youth rally for President Robert Mugabe. The government's action concerns many online programmers, as does the new draft Cybercrime and Cybersecurity Bill set to regulate the online space and root out criminal elements. The bill will protect against online bullying, revenge porn, and crack down on the spread of false information. Njabulo Ncube is the coordinator of the Zimbabwe National Editors Forum.
While they take cognizance to the fact that there are some positives, there is a recognition that this proposed piece of legislation intends to empower the police to intercept private communication. If you look at the background of how this proposed law came into being, the background is interesting in that the proponents of this law said that it was targeted at those who abuse the social media to instigate violence, banditry, and general instability.
Monroe and Aroni, along with other stakeholders, agree that online content creators have a role to play in informing Zimbabweans, especially now that the country is on the eve of elections set to take place in 2018. For VOA, this is Kudzai Znawashe from Harare.
A new Nigerian novel examines the clash between traditional and modern values in a marriage. In many traditional cultures, a husband may marry a second wife in order to carry on the family name if his first wife has not been able to get pregnant. The novel Stay With Me by Ayobami Adebayo tells a painful tale of a marriage where polygamy clashes with a couple's loving relationship. VOA's Adam Phillips has the story.
At the beginning of Stay With Me, Yejide has been unable to get pregnant after 4 years of marriage to Akin, her husband. Akin's extended family pressures him to take a second wife. He reluctantly agrees. The other woman, named Funmi, does not come to live with the couple, but her presence slowly poisons their relationship, as Yejide is expected to take a secondary role if Funmi bears Akin a child. Author Ayobami Adebayo says this family dynamic is common in today's Nigeria, where a childless mother has low status.
And it's something that I thought about a lot while I was working on this book. Particularly within families, a lot of the power that women get to wield is dependent on their ability to have children, preferably male children, such that a woman who gets married and doesn't have children, in many ways, as far as many people, for instance, the husband's family are concerned, that marriage is not existent. If he gets somebody pregnant, that woman who gets pregnant has more say, has more rights, will be respected more than the woman who's been married to him for a decade or so.
Until recently, polygamy was widespread in Nigeria. Adebayo says the practice is far rarer than it used to be, but the possibility lingers even in relatively westernized families.
You are aware as a woman that men are not required to be monogamous. Even if the woman doesn't move in with you, you're always aware that if he decides that he's going to have a mistress and he's going to set her up, people are really just going to tell you, you know what, you have to just live with this.
Adebayo says that when a couple is infertile, most assume it's the woman's fault.
While I was researching this novel, I spoke to people who work as doctors, fertility clinics. And one very interesting thing that I found out was that out of 10 couples, only 2 out of 10 men would show up to even get tested. When a couple doesn't have children, it's seen as a tragedy, but it's more of the woman's problem. I'm talking today in Nigeria, and I often wonder about why that is.
In Adebayo's novel, it's actually Akin's mother who argues most forcefully for him to take a fertile second wife. Indeed, Adebayo says that even though women are often expected to be subservient to men in Nigerian households, they are often matriarchs who run things.
Yeah, as long as they don't show that they're doing it. Sort of a tightrope that many women have to walk. One of the byproducts, I think, of polygamy was that in many families, if not most, many children developed an allegiance to their mothers, so that when children grow up, the mothers become very powerful.
Many Nigerian men justify women being subservient by saying it aligns with centuries-old African culture. But Adebayo says that both history and her observation of her grandparents and great-grandparents contradict this.
They were ideas that we absorbed when we were colonized by the British, Victorian ideas, Judeo-Christian ideas, that we somehow come to think of as the way we have always done things. I mean, one very interesting example is the concept of women working outside of the home. I mean, if you read our history, it was just normal for many women to work outside of the home. But now you have people telling you that it's African culture for a woman not to have her own financial independence. So I think it's a convenient thing that people reach for when they want to sometimes keep women down.
Ayobami Adebayo is the Nigerian author of Stay With Me, a new novel published in August by Knopf. Stay With Me is shortlisted for the 2017 Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 72nd United Nations General Assembly opens with a theme focusing on people, striving for peace and a decent life for all on a sustainable planet. Host Shaka Sali and his guest will discuss the UNGA's theme, and its importance for the people of Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.